Approaching on a 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. On at 15 seconds, guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff, 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
Here is part two with my interview with Peter Whitley, where we get into a contact modality that he developed using out-of-body experience. We also get into an interesting aspect of where is information stored in the universe. And Peter talks about where they're pulling information on the ship, which is a type of modality that matches up with what Dr. Michael Newton talks about in Lives Between Lives. Very, very similar, which is very interesting. And the other thing we talk about in this is we talk about flying the craft. So here's my part two interview with Peter Whitley. This is extremely interesting. I would encourage you to continue listening. Thank you.
Okay, so let's get to the interesting part now. I had my sighting, you had your contact experiences. And so when you get down the rabbit hole, you got to figure out, like, where do we go next? Like, how do I figure this thing out? And what I did is I would start to talk to people like you. You've talked to the beings. Okay, what did they have to say? What did they tell you and stuff? And you had a different method. So let's get into your method. And it's one of the contact modalities that I wrote about in the book called Contact Modalities. And the idea that there are people who have figured they may have a talent to do this or a talent to do that. And you have developed a talent to do out-of-body experiences, and I can put you in contact. I'll put this tape out to a couple of other people who do it, who you may be able to interact with. And so let's get into this whole part of your UFO experience where you decide that you're going to use this modality to figure out what's going on. And talk a little bit about where you learned this technique and how it works, and maybe for background for people, a little bit about you. I think you mentioned one thing in the one tape I saw, and maybe you can elaborate where the physicist John Wheeler said, there's no out there out there. And I remember you sort of implied this with out of body experiences. And I don't think the interviewer really caught on what you're talking about, but let's get into the out of body experience, where you learned this and how you started to use this technique to figure out what the whole UFO thing is about.
Absolutely. To preface, I guess to preface the whole thing is for about 20 years, I've been into self-hypnosis. Also, I've been into using audio induction hypnosis on myself, just for like, you know, personal betterment, you know, motivational things, et cetera, that kind of thing. And at times in my life, I've done it more or less, but in, you know, the past 5 to 10 years, I've been using it almost daily. You know, in the past couple of years, I came to a point where I was a bit bored with it. You can imagine that after there's only so many times you can, you know, listen to, you know, motivate yourself or, don't feel guilty about stuff before you get a bit bored. Perhaps maybe I should branch out. So I branched out a bit. I went, like you said, I kind of down the rabbit hole of what other things there were along those lines, hypnosis and stuff like that. What I came across eventually was the Monroe Institute's Gateway Experience. I read a bit about it. It sounded interesting to me. It had some parallels with hypnosis and hypnotic inductions. And so I gave Wave One a shot. I gave it a try. It didn't blow my mind at first, but it was something new. It was relaxing. And I could tell that whatever methodology they were using worked. I could tell they were onto something. So eventually I went through all the waves, their entire course. And I don't want to say this to necessarily endorse anyone's product.
Yeah.
The Gateway experience helped me. There are many paths to astral projection and the out of body experience. You know, this is just the path I took.
Yeah. We should, however, mention that the CIA and a bunch of people were using Monroe Institute, that they realized these guys were on the leading edge, and they sent a lot of the remote viewing people in there to increase their abilities and stuff. So it is a fairly major type of thing that was on the leading edge. And I think the government admitted this, or based upon what they were doing. So just for
people Absolutely.
To understand, it wasn't just another course. This is a course that was highly watched by intelligence people.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. Robert Monroe was an absolute pioneer in this field, did more for the field than probably anyone else who's ever lived. So absolutely, you're absolutely right. It's been verified. There's been government interest in it. So when I finished this course, by the time you finish the course, you're basically able to experience an out-of-body experience. You're able to access that state. When I realized I could access that state, my immediate thought was, wait, I really want to do this, to go up there. I want to visit, like you said, I want the important thing to me about this entire phenomenon isn't, counting the lights in the sky, how big the ship is, et cetera, how fast the Tic Tac flies. I don't care about that stuff. I mean, it's real. It's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I care about is who or what is doing this and why are they doing this?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. So, now I'm like I said, I'm very partial to traditional hypnotic inductions. What I did was I recorded my own hypnotic induction. But then I used some of the techniques and technologies that I found with the Gateway experience to add on to that to enter the astral state. So, yes, basically how I do it is I use my audio induction that I made and I put myself into a state of deep hypnosis, and then I exit my body. And like you mentioned, and yeah, I'll go elaborate on this a bit more. I think there's a misconception among people when you say the word astral projection, even people who might start to look into it. There's a misconception, perhaps, until you actually do it, that it's simply reaching some state of relaxation or meditation, floating out of your body, and you're out and about. The reality is, in order to reach that state, you have to go deep within yourself. It's the going within yourself that is integral to the process. If you can't go deep enough within yourself to access what I will call the universal consciousness, people have different words for it. If you can't go deep enough within yourself to access that, you'll never make it out astrally. I think that's a key component of it. And I think anyone that wishes to practice this should keep that in mind, right? You're going in yourself in order to access a larger space of reality, which we call the astral plane.
And you talked about the vibrating, because this you'll see in psychedelics, and you'll see in even Deb Cobble talking about when she had her first experience, she could feel every atom in her body vibrating. You have a vibrating state. Can you talk a little bit about that, about how you, the concept of moving this, getting this vibration going, and that what separates you? And because a lot of people will maybe have tried it and not, have misconceptions about how it's done. How exactly do you do it? How do you feel when you're in the state where you know that you're about to be successful?
Certainly. And I believe I mentioned this before. I'm going to use some terms here that even 2 years ago I would have laughed at, to be honest with you. Part of my process is that I never believed this was even a thing before, but I open my chakras, right? I open my chakras. Once I have done that, and I am deep into the hypnotic induction, I begin the vibrational process. I begin at my toes, and much like you just said, I feel the atoms or whatever. I feel the vibration. There's a vibration there, an energy.
Yeah.
And that energy slowly grows in feeling from my toes, slowly up through my body. During this process, I am making myself, I am willing myself to use that vibration to exit the body, As it finally comes up towards the head, I can feel something coming out. An energy, which feels like the real me, right? When you get to the top, your crown chakra, they call it, or at least that's what I call it. When you get to the top and you have that energy vibration, if you're deep enough, if you're comfortable enough, you can snap, and you snap out. And at that point, you're in a state of astral projection. You're in that out-of-body experience. You never lose contact with your body. You're always aware your body is there. If someone were to interrupt me, I do this alone with the door closed. If someone were to interrupt me, it very well might bring me out of the process. You know, if you were to tap me on the shoulder, it very well might bring me out of the process. If something happens or I want to come back to my body, you can very easily do so. You're never completely disconnected. You know that your body is there. But you are out. You can look down around and see what's there. You know, I have just my own routine where I don't like to wear a wristwatch or things like that when I do it. So I take those off. I take the keys or my phone out of my pockets, et cetera, et cetera. And you can see those objects. You know, you can look down there and see, why did I put my phone upside down? Or I forgot to take my keys out today. You know, the keys aren't there. They're still in my pocket. Yeah. So you are out. You're objectively out. But that's basically the process I use.
Were you shocked the first time you got out?
Not particularly. The gateway experience process is a little different, but they really ease you into it. At that point, I realized what the goal was. You know, they tell you what the goal is eventually. I wasn't particularly shocked, honestly. I was maybe exhilarated, you know, like, I can really do this, you know. But I felt like I was on the right track to being able to do something like that. That's why I pursued it in the first place.
Did you sort of cruise around before you went for the aliens, or did you go straight for the UFO intelligence?
I went straight for the UFO intelligence. I've had people have requested that I astrally project myself to other places. Yeah. And I've done so a couple of times just to, you know, report back what it was like. But no, I wanted to go straight up there. And it's not as simple as like, I'm floating above my body and I fly through the ceiling and I go up into the sky and I find a UFO. It doesn't really happen like that. The astral plane isn't quite as cut and dry as that. Once I'm out of the body, just my intent is to go there. And I more or less zip up inside. I should say that, interestingly enough, during these experiences, when I get there, I don't see the outside of the ship. I arrive inside the ship. The first few times I did it, first half dozen times, I would be in front of a window and looking at the Earth. And it wasn't until about the third time that I was looking out that window that I realized I'm looking down at Japan. Wow. You know, I could see the Earth down there and cloud cover and stuff. And it was the third or fourth time I looked down there, I thought, oh, hey, that's Japan. We're right up here above Japan. Yeah. Wow.
You mentioned a key word. Maybe you can elaborate on it. And that is the idea of intent. It's the same thing as when people do remote viewing, that when you actually look at it, it's like, how does the mind know? All you got is a number, where to go, where the target is, what is, whether it's in future or the past or whatever. And it's the intent. It just finds it. It's not like you go and you got to figure out where it is. If you think about it, it takes you there immediately, correct?
Yeah, absolutely correct, Grant. And that's kind of why, to me, I call it the universal consciousness. I feel there is a connection between, you know, all points in space and time are connected. We go all back to the physics of it and stuff, or what we think are the physics of it. But that, you're exactly right. It's the intent. You know, you can, I believe there is a connection there, and that's why it's so easy. Yeah.
So let's go through some of the experiences. Let's go through, you've done 40 and then you stopped. Is that still correct?
That's correct. That's
okay.
Correct.
So let's go through how this thing develops and who you talked to and what they told you. And let's go through the whole thing. This is a fascinating story.
Sure. Like I said, the first half dozen times I got up there, I was just inside something and looking through this weird circular window at the Earth. And I remember just asking, of course, not verbally, just, you know, in my mind, you know, is there anyone there? And I was told, you know, you need to wait here. And so, yeah, and I'm not sure why. Perhaps it was to acclimate myself to the environment. Who knows?
So you're interacting with sort of an intelligence, but you can't see it. Yeah, I'm familiar with that. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, the telepathic communication.
Yeah.
The very first time when I was let in a few minutes after I sat there or floated there, what have you, by the window, I was met by a small gray. And the gray asked me, would you like to look around? Or telepathically said, would you like to look around? And I said, sure. On that note, before I go any farther, there was, I believe, the second or third time I went up there, a gray asked me, what would you like to look at? And I said, whatever you'd like to show me. And for the entirety of these 40 experiences, I never once was able to say, hey, would you show me the control room, or would you show me this or that? They seemed to have an agenda that they wanted to show me things. So going back to that first time I was up there, I said, you know, like I said, hey, yeah, can just show me around. We materialized, if you will, in what looked like a nursery with, you know, kiddie wallpaper and stuff. Maybe
was
like,
that right?
Yeah, no, it looked like a nursery, just like, you know, a storybook nursery. And there was a what appeared to be a human baby there. And three human-looking nurses. The oddest thing to me about it was that the baby was kind of floating. These three nurses were, they appeared to be, to me, it looked like they were tickling it or something to that effect. My gray companion, guide, he asked me if I'd like to hold the baby. And I was pretty confused because I I'm up there in an out of body experience, you know, can I, and I, you know, I communicated to him, can I hold the baby? He said, sure. And so at any rate, I got closer so I could hold this baby. And what I realized was that these three nurses who I took to be human nurses weren't human at all. There was actually, you could tell there was some sort of, I can only describe it as a hologram over them. And in both behind the hologram, they were actually grays. And this made me feel a bit uncomfortable. I didn't like the idea that I was not being shown the truth. And so as soon as I noticed this, I asked my great companion, I said, can you please show me how things really are? I don't want to see this, you know, fakery. And the companion agreed. And
is this the tall gray you're talking? Is it a tall gray or is this?
This is a short gray. This short is a gray. Short gray. Yeah. And he agreed. I call him a he because actually they do the, I've interacted mainly with five entities, two small grays. One of the small grays, from that first time, had what I can only consider, what I can only say is masculine, some sort of masculine air about him. Another small gray had some sort of feminine air about her. And
can I interrupt? Because I always like to ask this question, and I'm actually going to do doing a lecture on this, is the whole concept of, did the alien have any clothes on? Mm-hmm. Did it have any sex organs? And how do you know if it's a male or a female? Now, I know the thing because I've interacted with what I firmly believe was a female intelligence. And it's, you talk about the sense. So explain that. Did it have clothes? Did it have sex organs? And how do you know it's a male or a female? This idea that it you just know what it is. You don't have to, almost like if it's screen imaging, it doesn't matter. You know whether it's a male or a female.
Yeah, you know, it's almost an instantaneous knowing. It's unspoken.
Yeah.
The communication, both in my conscious experiences, physical abductions, and these astral experiences, communication is always telepathic. Mm-hmm. And I think in that sense, there's an openness in our mind and the mind, if you will, of that entity to where it's just apparent. Like you can tell kind of some things, basic things about this entity, one of which is that they're masculine or feminine. To answer your question about the clothes, the first few times that I met the small grays, they did. The masculine one wore a pair of glasses.
Yeah, is that right?
The feminine one had something on. It wasn't necessarily a feminine blouse, but something. But I would tell them every time, can you take that stuff off? It's just distracting to me.
Well, and they eventually glasses. That's
yeah, they eventually quit wearing that stuff. It sounds so goofy. But yeah, it's just an instantaneous feeling to me. It's like you know the person in a sense, or the entity that, you know, and so yeah, it's just a feeling you have. And how do I know if they're male or female? I don't. They never once revealed that to me. In fact, I never particularly mentioned to them that I feel that you're masculine. I feel that you're feminine. Yeah. I didn't mention that to either of them. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
And what about the baby? Because people are, of course, are going to ask the baby, because you know the story about the bonding with the mothers, that they're told to hold the child and they suddenly get the impression that it's their child. Did you ever get that idea that this may have been your child? Why were they showing you a child? And what was the child wearing? Was it wearing like in bound up and like a blanket, or what was the baby?
Baby was in a one piece of some sort.
Okay.
Nondescript.
Okay.
Almost nothing. Actually, when they told me, would you like to hold the child? it was also communicated that these children need to be held. And that was part of the reason I asked, well, can I even hold the child? Because I'm not physically there, right? But apparently on the astral plane, it still works like that. I did come to learn, as you mentioned, about if there were any children related to me there. With all due respect, Grant, I'd like to keep that aspect private.
Okay.
And I apologize to you and your listeners and viewers.
I'm just saying that a lot of people will know the story about the bonding of the baby.
Sure. You can probably put two and two together. I just don't want to go. Deep into that relationship.
Okay.
But the baby appeared to me to be a completely human baby. I did not notice. I've read all the accounts of people seeing babies that seem to be a bit off with larger eyes and so on and so forth. This seemed to be a rather robust little baby.
And how does that experience end?
That experience ends where I held the baby a bit, gave it back. The gray, my companion, said, "We're out of time," and I came back to my body. Woke up. That was the first experience I ever had up there.
Is that the only? Did you have another baby experience, or have you had with other hybrid experiences?
I had one other baby experience where I saw this what I thought was the same baby. I don't know that it was, but it looked very similar to the other baby. During that experience, I had a brief interaction with another entity that appeared to be human. His age, I'd say he looked like he was perhaps 30 years old. But he appeared to be, I don't want to say perfect human, because there's no such thing as a perfect human, but his proportions were just perfect. His skin almost was plastic. His hair almost seemed to be molded. In that sense, it was almost the uncanny valley type effect you hear about, where this person appears to be almost a caricature of what another species might think humans should look like. And I commented on him, a bit about this, how he looked. And I asked him, I said, "So do you age? You really are, quote, what we would say beautiful, I guess. Do you age?" He said, "No, we are babies. We age to the age you see me now. We don't age any further." I asked him if he had a home. He was amused, they have personalities. He was amused, and he said, "Well, mainly I spend my time on the ship," but he gave me a visualization. Oftentimes when they communicate with you, they they have some way where they can make you almost live an experience. And he made me live this experience where, it sounds so goofy, but it was as if we were in this idyllic small town, if you will. The buildings and things I couldn't describe, but it was like a parade. People were so happy. I lived this for just a brief moment, and then I snapped back, and he said, "That's basically what you'd call my home, but I spend most of my time here on the ship."
It's interesting you bring up, because that's one of the other questions I always bring up to people is, for example, I talked to Betty Andreessen, who you would have read about.
Yeah.
And Bob Luca, her husband, I had an interview with them, and I asked Bob, I said, "You saw 1946, you saw the being, and you've seen the being your whole life. Did it ever get any older?" And then he said, "No, but beings live a long time." And it was sort of like trying to rationalize the fact, but I've never really heard anybody who said that the being actually got any older. It always seemed to be the same age, which then you start to wonder, is this as physical? If it's a flesh and blood being, it should age the same as we do.
Yeah. So, you know, I have a lot of questions about that. Unfortunately, my experiences with these more, you know, human looking entities or, you know, humans or whatnot or hybrids were limited to just, I believe, those two cases. The rest of my experiences were with grays and mantis type beings.
Okay, so talk a little bit about more. You're dealing, I guess, with a lot with the tall gray in terms of him showing you what, and so tell us some of the stuff that he described to you as to what they're up to, what they're doing, why they're doing it, that sort of thing.
I think very, you know, the second or third time I was up there, I was shown, this time I met the feminine small gray, and I was shown some sort of tubes. They looked to be it's hard to describe, just tubes. And she showed me those tubes. I asked, what are in the tubes? She said, you are. But it wasn't a you as in me personally. It was more, the implication was like you as like the human race. The following time I went up there, at that time I met the tall gray. I was accompanied by one of the small grays, and the tall gray was at some sort of I don't know what you would call it, some sort of a desk, I guess. You know, it's when you're up there, the objects all seem to be molded out of white plastic for the most part. I don't know what they are, but it's hard to distinguish exactly what things are. But I'm just in human terms, I could say he was like at a desk or at a lab station working. He had one of those capsules. He had a long rod. He was sticking it in there. And the gray companion at this time, this particular instance, the tall gray didn't speak to me. He spoke to me later, a different experience. My companion said, he's working on souls. It was communicated to me that these were the souls of humans that had died. He did something inside this capsule. Now, at this point, I could see inside the capsule. And there was what I can only describe as like as pieces of light or strings of light inside the capsule. It just looked like electricity in a sense, you know, a few branches. And he was doing something to it. And I asked what he was doing. And they and my companion said, he's helping it evolve or develop or something along those lines was the idea. He finished what he was doing and that capsule zipped out of there and another capsule arrived. I asked, well, where are these capsules going? And the answer given to me was, it doesn't matter where they're going. What matters is why. And I didn't quite understand that. But there was also the implication in this communication that they aren't necessarily coming back to Earth. They may be going somewhere else. So eventually, on another experience, I met the tall gray and he took me next to this machine he would work on, right? And once again, I saw the capsule he had there and this energy. And I felt, this will sound strange. I felt a bit uncomfortable looking at this energy. It felt the closest thing I can make, the best analogy I can make is it felt like I was looking at someone naked. That didn't, you know, that I wasn't supposed to be watching. It felt like that. And I said, I'm really uncomfortable looking at this. And what he told me was basically, well, that's because right now your soul is alone in your body. He said, now these souls are in a state where they're together or something to that effect. And so that's why you feel uncomfortable. He said, for them, it's perfectly, for the soul, it's perfectly natural. Yeah. And at any rate, we eventually got to, what are you doing with these souls? And that, like I said, they said their purpose was to help the souls evolve, and develop. And I asked, the Gray, I said, and he said, wow, you know, and I was, said, you know, I thought this is kind of cool, you know, can we ever develop into something like you? You know, to me, these, you know, I'm like a child looking up to like his father, you know, these wise beings. And the Gray was amused and said, we don't have souls. We were created for this purpose, to help entities with souls. And the clear implication was not just humans, that there are other entities with souls in our universe that they help. Yeah. And so basically, that is what they explained to me they're doing here. We had a variety of experiences, myself and the small grays and the tall grays, where they showed me other parts of the ship and so on and so forth. But in terms of the big picture, that's basically what they told me they are here to do. I'd like to say, there were many times during our communications about things like this, the soul, where they send them, so on and so forth, where the Grays would tell me, basically, don't worry about that. And the communication was more along the lines of, you wouldn't understand it anyway. I always felt like I was a child and they were an adult trying to explain to me quantum physics or calculus or these type of things. Everything that was communicated to me felt like it was simplified or dumbed down a bit so that my, you know, puny human brain could get a grasp of it.
And I think there, you mentioned there was some questions that they just would not deal with. I mean, in terms of, you're not going to understand. So it was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Quite frequently it happened. Yeah. Quite frequently. And it wouldn't necessarily be about big picture things either. You know, I might ask them, you know, they took me once to, what looked like a bedroom. And again, it was hologram eyes, and I had to tell them, can you please take off the disguise? This is disturbing me, you know? And they showed me this bedroom, but they didn't quite explain what it was. And eventually they told me, don't worry about it. Another time, one interesting thing they, along those lines, I was taken to, this sounds so goofy to say it out loud. You know, I've journaled all of this, but some of these things I've never spoken aloud. This is one of them. I was taken once to what appeared to be like the captain's quarters of a ship, like a ship out at sea, with a chair and a desk, and along the walls were a great many books. And they took a book off the shelf and they opened it. And this book was not a regular book. It was more like a holographic, I don't know, history, if you will. At that point, when I realized what I was seeing, I said, can you please quit with these disguises? I want to see what this room looks like for real. You know, and I understand why they did it. We did have a conversation once where they said, you know, well, we're doing this so you can understand where we are, right? You know that, right? And I said, yeah, and it helps. But once I get it, I'd kind of rather see the reality of it. The reality of it was there was a strange molded chair. There was a strange molded desk. And this book was simply a large white slab. that they took out of a white wall. They showed me via this book a history of what it appeared to be a history of human transportation or travel. This book allowed me to sort of live it, you know, it like a deep VR immersive experience, as if you're there, from people walking to finally building ships, crossing great oceans, creating cars, and et cetera. It was this journey of some sort. And when we finished, I got a bit bored. Sometimes I would get bored up there. It sounds strange to say I'd get bored. I got a bit bored. And I said, okay, I get it. Like, we make transportation, eventually we're gonna make spaceships. And the entity said, no, that's not the message, more or less. They said, no, that's not it. We're gonna start over. And so I didn't wanna start over. I know this must sound strange to people, because you're up there in this fantastical place, to get bored or not wanting to experience it. But it's just how I felt. And that was an instance where he eventually just said, okay, don't worry about it, in a sense that I don't think you're going to get this. I'll say one more thing about that room that was quite interesting. I went to that room on another occasion, and they pulled another book from the wall. The wall didn't appear to have any books, but they go to the wall and this white slab comes out.
Yeah.
And somehow it was communicated to me that the information is actually held within the walls, not necessarily these slabs. And as they communicated this idea to me, it became apparent that this ship wasn't simply mechanical. It had some sort of almost what we would say biological or conscious properties, as if the ship had a consciousness of some sort. And this really shocked me. And so I stopped for a second and I asked, I said, so is this ship alive? And they said, it's not alive like you consider things to be alive, but the process by which we make this ship is similar to what you would call biology. Wow. Which I felt was very interesting and a bit strange. I did have the opportunity to pilot the ship once.
I was just going to ask you. Okay, go ahead. have you heard my research on that?
No, I may have in the past. I don't have.
I have 50 people who've flown the ship. You're number 51. So go ahead.
Okay. On one occasion, this was solely what I did. I sat down on what seemed to be a sofa, but I realized soon after it was more like a molded chair of sorts. Yeah. There was some sort of, I suppose, control panel in front of me. There was a large window, or at least something I could see out of. I doubt it was made of glass there. However, this control panel, or what I took to be a control panel, was out of reach. I couldn't actually touch it. And so I commented that, you know, they said, would you like to try to pilot this thing? And so, you know, as with most things, they ask me when I'm up there, I just say, sure, why not? You know, I'm up here at your discretion. So I said, sure, but I said, I can't reach that. And they said, you don't need to reach it. Don't worry about that. And this process happened where I guess my consciousness and what I earlier referred to as the ship having some sort of consciousness merged. How that happened, I can't explain, and I don't know. But it merged, and I was able to effortlessly pilot this ship. And we flew down. I was in my bedroom on the bed during this session. We flew down above the condominium I live in. It's a 21-story, rather large building. We weren't that high up. We seemed to be about at the level, or perhaps even lower, that an airplane might fly. And this worried me. I said, someone's going to see us. Isn't someone going to see us, or something going to happen? And again, amused, they said, no one's going to see us. Don't worry. And then we flew back up. I did travel to the moon after that. It was the only other place I could think to travel. And then the session ended.
Wow, fascinating. So again, we have intent, is because what was described to me. I don't want to sort of muddy your water of your story, but
you aren't.
It's the idea that you become one with the craft, and whatever you think the craft knows, and you can go wherever you want. There's one guy that I'm going to put you in contact with who's had piles of out-of-body experiences where he sat down and they said, where would you like to go? And he said, I'd like to see the Milky Way from a distance. And he said within 1 second, he piloted this thing and he was looking out the window, as you described, and there was the Milky Way in the distance.
And, fantastic, yeah. And
that's the sole idea. And this idea that the craft is biological, and that you become one with the craft and you merge with the craft, and your consciousness and the consciousness of the craft, it does whatever you intend it to do. Yeah. Fascinating. I'm so happy to hear you tell the story, because it's almost, I've got people, you'll hear if you've ever seen some of the stuff I put out. I've got a 747 United Airlines pilot. I've got a retired U.S. Air Force colonel. And they always say, oh, and it seemed like a dream. And I always say, just tell me how you flew the craft. And everybody describes exactly what you described. Exactly. Nobody's ever said it was this little stick and I flew this.
I don't think a stick exists on those ships. They're quite beyond what we would do. But yes, you're exactly right, Grant. It's just intent. It's just intent. And it's effortless.
Yeah. Or you even have, and you start seeing clues when you get this. For example, I don't know if you've followed the Wilson leak document that I got first, and then we leaked it on the internet. And at the very end, it says, and people said, oh, this is counterintelligence, disinformation. And it says, we have a craft, we think we can fly it, which is what the story is. They've got an intact craft and they can't fly it because you need a consciousness interface to fly the craft. There is no steering wheel. There is no start button on the thing. And you need consciousness to make the thing operate. So they may have an intact craft that can't do anything with.
Absolutely. I completely understand that. And I think that's the case. Absolutely. They're looking at it the wrong way.
Well, let's go back to the book, because that's the other thing that I don't know if you see my research, but I did a lot on the book. The same guy that I'm going to put you in contact with about having a lot of out-of-body experiences, they take him to what he calls the spirit world. He's with his dead mother. She's taking him on this tour. And one of the things that he sees, I think you mentioned in your previous thing, was he sees a crystal. There's a table. His mother shows him this table inside this building. And he says, you look and you think about a person, and this crystal comes out of the table, and you can see in 3D the vision of that person's life. And he said, I wondered whatever happened to my dog. And the dog crystal came out, and he saw that his neighbor had shot the dog. And he saw his dog's entire life. So is that what you're describing? Because Michael Newton, if you followed Journey of Souls, he talks as well about being in the libraries between lives, where they open up these books that have the 3D vision and they can look at their past life and plan and stuff like that. Is that basically what we're talking about with these things that they pull out of the wall, that you're looking at a 3D vision of something they want to show you, or of history or of your life or whatever?
Yes. So to clarify, and we can talk about the crystal and the crystal I saw in a bit, but that's precisely these things they pulled out of the wall, what they are. They seem to contain infinite knowledge or knowledge of everything that has happened. And seemingly, yeah, like you said, if you wondered what happened to your dead dog, you could relive it. Yeah. You know, not just find out, not just look at it, live it. Yeah. Live it. Yeah, that's a they have this technology, and it's mind-boggling to think that they can somehow access the history of everything and everyone, but that apparently appears to be the case.
Yeah, but that's an old concept, even back in Eastern, in Asia and like India and China, the whole idea about the Akashic record, the field, and everything is recorded. And that's this idea where I mentioned that before the show, I think, or maybe we did it during the show, but this idea that experiencers, 40% of all experiencers say at one point during the experience, they knew the answer to everything in the universe. And they didn't remember it when they got back. All they remembered is they remembered everything. And that 31% of all people who've had near-death experiences say at one point during their experience, they knew the answer to everything in the universe, which is the contact modality idea, is that everything's in the field and it's the ability to access the field. It's not that idea that you can get in there. And that's why I'm so interested in what you're doing, is you've realized the material is there and you found a way to access the field and learn to bring it back. And that's how you learn, is because the material that's in the field that they're showing you is going to be more accurate than some theory that some scientist came up with where they're trying to run experiments and stuff like that. It's a very easy way to grab the material, and it's the ability to get in there, but then to be able to bring it back without forgetting it.
Yes, precisely. That is precisely it. And that's why I personally just call it the universal consciousness. It's all there. It's all there to be accessed. Yeah. And I'm reading your book, Contact Modalities, right now, which is fantastic. And you cover, there are many, many ways to access that field. Astral projection is but one. But exactly, I believe this is the way to do it, you know, using some modality to get there. What you mentioned about how 40% of contactees report knowing everything, you know, so to speak, 30% of NDE experiencers have that thing. That also happened to me. It happened with one of the small grays. This was later on during my, during one of the later sessions, the gray said, I'd like to try something with you. And the gray came close to my, you know, astral body, and he looked directly into my eyes. Now, he doesn't have pupils, but his eyes came close to mine. Something happened where my consciousness somehow merged with his. At that moment, I felt exactly what you just said, Grant. Yeah. I felt like I knew everything. It was pure ecstasy. It was an amazing feeling. And it's not like I knew who was going to win the Super Bowl or stuff like, I mean, we're talking just like, you realize, oh my goodness, I have access to everything, but I have access to the whole field, right? It was a really, really powerful experience. And, you know, hearing, you know, like you said, it's happened to so many people. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And that's why I think it's so important when you talk about this thing that you go within with an out-of-body experience. It's this whole idea that Deepak Chopra will say, everything's an activity inside consciousness. Everybody forgets that whatever comes into your head is in your head. There is no out there. It's in your head. And that everything within the universe may be within yourself, and you're accessing it through consciousness, that it's there. And this is a concept, I think, that probably the reason that there's no disclosure is because they can't figure it out either. They know this sort of concept that through out-of-body experiences and remote viewing people, because where do you go in remote viewing? The guy's sitting at a table and he's just sitting there, and they give him a number, and he has to be going within himself to get that material, that it's there, and somehow the consciousness with intent knows exactly where to go and doesn't need any instruction or whatever. And that's the most amazing part, I think, of this whole thing, is when you start to realize that's possible, you go like, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. It changes your life, and you realize that most people in the scientific fields, et cetera, in the mainstream, are looking in the complete opposite direction.
Yeah, yeah.
They're looking out. You need to look in. Yeah. You need to look in to access it. As a society, I feel like we've taken a wrong turn somewhere, yeah. And we've lost. People that look within using these contact modalities are often ridiculed or thought of as, you know, new age hippies or, you know, whatnot. It's not something that's common anymore.
Yeah.
And it would really change the world, in my opinion, if more people would have the experiences like you and I and the hundreds of people you've talked to have had, because it quite literally changes your life.
And that may be what it's about, is through them and through you and I that we came in and we decided that we're going to put this material out, because everybody wants it, you know, everything yesterday, but it's a process. It's a process of learning, and that everything takes centuries to do. It's like Max Planck said, science does not advance by convincing someone else that you're right. It advances the idea of one funeral at a time, that the newer generation comes in, and it's going to take many years to change all that thinking that we've developed, this materialistic idea, that all this kind of stuff. And that's why I think it's so important that people like you and others get a voice. Because when people start to hear, because I put out so many stories about people flying the craft, people hear it and they go, oh yeah, and they become used to it. And they go, there must be something to it. They're all telling the same story. And it's a bizarre story that shouldn't be taking place in a materialistic world. So that's why I think experiencers are so important. And we got to give them a voice to put out their story, because they have the information. They're the only ones that have the information that can solve what's actually going on, I think.
I completely agree. I mean, that's all the work I do is, you know, is to exactly for that purpose, helping people get the word out. If we can convince one person who's had this experience to come forward, who was hesitant before, it's all worth it. If we can convince one person who doesn't take it seriously to start to take it seriously, it's all worth it. Like you said, the progress doesn't happen in an instant, right? Yeah. And hopefully the work you're doing, I'm doing, many others are doing, hopefully we're putting humanity back on the right track.
Yeah. And you can only do with what you've got. So that it's, I always say, like, you and I would be in a worse position than someone else that doesn't know, because, you know, if you die and there is some sort of judgment thing, we can't say, well, I didn't know, I forgot, or my mother-in-law upset me or whatever. To whom much is given, much is expected. So you and I have the information, and the onus is on us to put it out. And I think that's probably what they want. Is they're giving the information to you, and they want you to tell the other people. They're not telling you for your personal entertainment.
That's such a great point, Grant. That's such a great point. And I think so many of us that have had these experiences begin to feel that, just what you said, like, I've been given a gift here and I shouldn't squander it. I'm not meant to squander it, right? That's one of the key ways life has changed for me, is that I know I need to take advantage of what I have. I need to live this life, be open about stuff like this. You know, honestly, a couple of years ago, I was probably a much more selfish person than I am today. You know, I realized we're here in service of something. And I think that's to lead humanity towards this.
Yeah. Wow. So we have like I always say, it's like the Super Bowl analogy, that, you know, most people don't know anything's going on. We not only are in the stadium, we're on the field, and we don't know what kind of job we're playing, but to respect, to have the gratitude, the fact that you got to play in the big game and that you got to realize what's going on before anybody else did. And to take advantage of that and be respectful of what you've been given and grateful, and try to put it out there and not keep it to yourself. So I'm this is one of the best interviews I've ever done, in terms of somebody who I think is the same sort of idea I have, is get in there and get the information. There's got to be a fast way to get this material. Let's go to the crystal now. So we sort of shut this thing down. And I may want to do a thing where I get some of the out-of-body experience people, because you said you wanted to interact with some of these people. I'll bring a couple of people who And that would be the maybe the one question I'd have before we get to the crystal is this whole idea of the idea that nobody ever sees anybody being abducted. And this whole idea that a lot of experiencers will say, I had one physical experience, but most of them, I think, were out of body experiences. What do you think in terms of, do you think that a lot of the experiences that experiencers are having are actually out of body experiences and they're interpreting them? Because you'll always get the thing that they're being grabbed out of their beds or whatever, and people do disappear. But the concept is, you know, what's actually taking place in terms of, because we always want to put it in a physical thing. There's physical beings and they're grabbing us and they're taking us and stuff like that. But when you see people going through walls and you see all this kind of stuff, you start wondering, like, is that really what's going on? Or nobody ever sees anybody being abducted. So what do you think about this thing? Because Ron Johnson, who I'm going to put you in contact with, said he had a couple different physical experiences at the beginning, but he said the vast majority he believes are out-of-body experiences that he's had. And he's like you, he's journaled everything for half a century and is doing a book on this, and basically sounds like what you're doing. But what do you say to that thing about what's actually going on during an experience? Is a lot of this out-of-body experience, do you think?
I would absolutely agree with that. And I think it's just our materialistic worldview that thinks, oh, okay, that, you know, you were physically taken on a craft and so on and so forth. You know, the experiences I've had over the past year on the astral plane, you know, like I said, you know, being able to, quote, hold a baby when I'm not physically there, this was possible, right? So it's really taught me a lot about, you know, like, it made me really question, you know, like, you know what? I think a lot of the things that we take to be physical, especially when it comes to these paranormal experiences, definitely may not be in the physical. They may be in the spiritual or on some consciousness level.
Yeah, it's the old thing. I'm doing a presentation I'm going to do online where I'm going to talk about this thing that it was only 1911 when we realized that atoms weren't solid. They ran the experiment to look at whether it's like a pudding with raisins in it. And that's when they did the gold foil experiment, and all the particles were going through the gold foil, and they went, what's going on here? And that's when we learned that it's all space. That's only 100 years ago. And so you realize, like, we believe a lot of stuff that probably isn't true at all. And it may be the idea that the download I was given was this, it's all consciousness. The consciousness is what creates the universe. The consciousness makes the brain, not the other way around, this sort of thing, that we're gradually learning. And you and I are just on the leading edge of this. And people may roll their eyes when we talk to them about it. But you and I understand that we are on the leading edge of something that's probably being accurately described to us.
I believe so. I mean, technologically and, you know, scientifically speaking, the human race, we're infants in terms of, you know, in terms of what other civilizations are at. Absolutely. It does tie into the crystal. Yeah. The crystal I was shown by one of the mantis type beings was very large. This was it was larger than myself. It was maybe I can't put dimensions on it, but it was quite large. You know, it was up to the ceiling in the room we're in, and it was encased in some sort of translucent material. And this mantis being held this crystal with great reverence. And this for the first time I saw it, and it was actually the only time I saw it, but we spoke about it later. He brought me to this crystal, and it was as if he wanted me to I hold it with the same reverence he did. And I had no idea what it was. I simply couldn't, right? I'm supposed to pray to this crystal, but I have no idea what it is. On a subsequent visit, what he told me that particular crystal does, that particular crystal provides energy, not necessarily in the way that we talk about like a car engine energy, but it provides some or all of the energy they need for something they're doing, presumably to power this ship and whatnot. I should say my experiences with the mantis type entities were on what I believe to be a different ship. It looked quite different than the ship the Grays have. The Gray ship is inside, it's very austere. And like I said, everything's white, looks like it's made out of molded plastic. The ship I was on with this mantis type being, it looked The best way I can describe it is it looked a bit Egyptian. I've been to Egypt, around there, taking a good week of tours. It looked a bit Egyptian in terms of just the way things were. It was, tan. It appeared, I thought there was sand on the ground. I actually asked him at one point, "Is that sand?" And he said, "No, it's not sand." I don't know what it was. But we on a subsequent visit, with the mantis type beings, I was shown a truncated cone. If you see this cup as if this were upside down, similar in shape, and it was tan or orange in color. It looked to be made out of stone, much like the artifacts you see in Egypt are made out of. I was told that this stone is what got them here. This stone was responsible for everything. And I took that a bit far in that I said, "Oh, you mean it created Earth and people and stuff like that?" He said, No. He said, "No, I shouldn't say stone." He never referred to it as a stone. It looked to me to be a stone. This object is what allowed them, apparently, to eventually harness the energy or the ability to travel from wherever they were from to where they are now. He again put me through one of those visualizations because I had many questions. Who made the stone? Did you make it? He said, "No, we didn't make it." "Do you know who made it?" He said, "We have an idea who made it, but don't worry about it." Okay, I guess I can't understand that. He put me through a visualization where I could see the early days, millennia ago, is how he described this to me before I went in the visualization. Millennia ago, when his species first came across this artifact. Artifact, I believe, is the more of the term or the image he conveyed when we talked about this artifact. It was so powerful, his species would touch it and they would simply dissolve. This was some sort of something in there which was far too powerful. And over countless years, this is a period of time apparently I cannot grasp. They finally learned how to interact with this artifact. And he furthermore, he told me this artifact created the crystal you see there. And so that, of course, led me to question, well, how does this artifact work? What do you mean it creates this? And I'm confused. I'm confused. And I want to pause for a second. When I first met one of the mantis type beings, at the end of my induction, when I go within myself, which is a key part of the process. There's a point during that induction where I go in myself that I go to the very, very bottom of my subconscious, what I feel to be. This occasion, I was not alone. There was something there with me, which is a very odd feeling. And I'm quite used to going under hypnosis in deep subconscious. And you're in your own head or you're in your own conscious. You're deep in there. You're alone. I was not alone. That was the first time I met a mantis type entity. And the first thing I asked them is, "You were there with me. Why?" And he replies, "Because I have a soul like you. Unlike the grays, these entities have souls." So, let's go back to about this artifact. I had many questions about this artifact, of course. He showed me a bit how it took them millennia, apparently, to understand what it was and how to use it. And like I said, my next question was, well, how do you use it exactly? And my attention was drawn, apparently by him, beyond this artifact. And there was a hall of sorts, and I could see about a dozen hooded entities. I couldn't see any of their face or any part of their body. About a dozen hooded entities just sitting there, and it appeared that they were meditating. And this was, it was imparted to me that that's how they use this. You know, he didn't get down to the nuts and bolts of how they make anything, but that was the message. You see these entities and they're in a deep state of something. That's how we use this. That's how we use this. And now, at another, a later date, it might have been my next session, or it might have been a few sessions later. As we entered into this area that I saw before. And as it turns out, it was actually, it was more of a circular hall with rows where these entities could sit. We were, when we had entered there on this occasion, the entities weren't there. And I asked why, and he said, because your presence would be a disturbance. Okay. So at one thing he explained to me during that session was that the crystal I had seen earlier, which was created via whatever these entities, hooded entities, were doing, represented so much work on their part that some of these entities passed away in the process of making it. Like they gave their lives, if you will, or they gave their existence to make this crystal. And I immediately then I recognized why he held it in such reverence the first time I saw it. And you know, I kind of apologized, or, you know, you think things up there. So, you know, you think like, oh, I'm sorry, but they know what you're thinking, yeah. You know? And so I felt, oh, I feel so guilty. About that, you know? And, but he further explained to me, he said, no, you don't understand. It's not a sad thing that these entities gave their existence for the creation of this. He said, from our standpoint and the length of time we apparently exist or live or whatnot, there could be no higher service and no more noble way to end their existence than in the creation of a crystal such as this. He said, you're thinking about it wrong. It's more of, we hold it in reverence, but this is truly the pinnacle of our achievement. You know, like, this is the highest any of us, meaning his species, I suppose, could hope to attain, would be to sacrifice their existence in the creation of just one of what I presume is probably many, many crystals in many, many ships all throughout the galaxy and perhaps the universe.
Fascinating, fascinating story. Let's go to how it stops and where you're going to go next. You have an experience, you do 40, you stop. So get into why you stopped and what your future plans are.
Sure. Towards the end of those 40 sessions, like I mentioned before, one of the later sessions, that smaller gray had me merge with his consciousness, and I felt that ecstatic feeling of knowing everything in the moment. At a later session after that, this gray said, okay, we did something to show for you the other day, right? I did this thing for you. He said, I'd like you to do something for me. You know, I keep saying said, but I think you and your listeners understand that it's not verbal communication. And I, of course, and as always, I just went along with it. Sure, sure. And what this entity did was the same thing, started the same way. Looked deep into my eyes, and our consciousnesses merged a bit. However, this time, suddenly, we were back to my physical body. Now, it's a bit difficult to explain, but so it was multi-layered. I was inside his consciousness. We were merged a bit, but he put his consciousness into my physical body, which is still just laying prone on the bed. And this was a bit shocking and uncomfortable. We were inside my physical body, and I could feel the entity start at the head and slowly, very slowly, begin to inhabit my physical body, to feel what it was like to have a physical human body. I could also, since our consciousnesses were merged at that point, I could tell that this was giving the entity a similar ecstatic feeling. They were experiencing something so unlike their existence that it was similar, you know, an ecstasy of sorts. Now, I don't want anyone to get the wrong impression. I didn't feel like my body was being taken over by an alien. At any time, I could have stopped this process. I was in the astral plane. You have complete control over that. I could have stopped it at any time, but I allowed it to continue. The entity did not attempt to move my body in any way. It was purely experiencing the physical human form. Now, this happened first, and I was uncomfortable, and I asked to stop. And so we stopped. And the entity was a bit, seemed, I won't say mad, but the entity was a bit, you know, peeved or something. I could feel there was a bit of like, you know, a bit of, why not? So at any rate, a couple of sessions later, the entity told me they'd like to try again. And I again agreed, you know, I agreed to it. And so this was the last session I did. The entity did the same process happened. We locked eyes, merged our consciousnesses together. I could feel him coming inside from the top. When the entity got to my heart, it stopped, because the heartbeat was shocking. I could feel that it was shocked by this. Like, it was almost too much. And I had to explain that that's just my, I mean, I'm sure it knew this, but I tried to explain, that's just my heartbeat. It's just my heart. And so kind of, you know, cautiously, it continued down. And so since our consciousnesses are merged, I can feel the feelings it's feeling. You know, I can tell it has trepidation.
Wow.
About this. You know, it was really, but this was one of the most bizarre things that happened to me. It continued to go down. It got to about my waist. And at that point, it probably was just my fear. And I think it's probably an irrational fear because I don't think there's anything to be afraid of. But at that point, I became a bit angry. And I said, no, this is over. This is over. We're done. And I exited the projection myself.
Yeah.
And that was the last time I did it. Yeah. It felt to me, I didn't necessarily quit specifically because of that uncomfortable situation. I learned a lot of things from the grays. I learned a lot of things from the mantis entities. I felt like I learned a lot about the big picture. I have to apologize. There are parts of the big picture that we haven't spoken about today that I keep private. You and I can perhaps talk about it off air. I prefer to just talk about this with other experiencers.
Yeah.
There are certain things. I don't reveal, but I felt like it was a good closing chapter to what I had learned. You know, I learned a lot. I felt like I had the big picture. And once it started to become a little uncomfortable, I'll take a break for a while and come back. I fully intend to restart the process next year in 2022. I fully intend to, but I wanted to take some time off, reach out to people like you, you know, and others, and see if others have had these experiences before I go back.
We'll see who comes forward. I mean, we may find something very interesting. Have you got any plans for what you're going to do when you go back? Have you any goals or things you want to explore?
Honestly, I plan to go in with the same intention, just to go up there and let them show me what they think I need to see. I honestly, that I trust their judgment far better than mine.
Yeah, that's a good attitude. That's the attitude I had when I did the psilocybin stuff. Was I call it psilocybin school? You just show up for school, and whatever the lesson is, that's the lesson. You don't ask, you don't try to demand, and you just go with it. And so it's like a school. It's you assume if the information is correct and more accurate and more valid, that they know what to teach you first. It's not like you're there to get a free ride or entertainment or learn the lottery numbers or whatever. You just go in there and say, whatever I need to learn, teach me.
Precisely. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think in a lot of ways we're infants compared to them being adults, and they have lessons to teach us. I also want to say, Grant, and just to be clear, I don't feel that there's anything whatsoever special about me personally. I think all of us, any of us, if we have the honest intent to do something like this, access the universal consciousness, go deeper within, not just to necessarily visit a UFO, but to find out more about the nature of reality, I think anyone can do that. Yeah. Using like one of the contact modalities in your book. I don't think there's anything special about me. This is just the path I took.
Exactly.
To get there.
Yeah, I agree. It's like a path. Like that's the idea. One of the contactees told me that they were told the message is not for everybody. So you may not be at that stage. You may have come just to learn the love or envy, or everybody has their path. And that's why I say it's so important that you respect the fact that you were given something very important, and the onus is on us to share it. That we were, to me, it's always like a gift that we are living in this world that, you know, people don't really realize what's going on. But when you see it, that we may have made this agreement that you and I would have this meeting before we were born, that we'd get together, you do this, I do that, we get together. And we just do what we can with what we've got. That's all you can really do. And just be grateful for the fact that, I always point out, you could be an untouchable in the streets of Calcutta, spend your days in the junkyards looking for something valuable enough to sell for food for tomorrow. We didn't get that mission. We got this mission. We should be eternally grateful that we got to play in the big game and, you know, share what we've learned.
Absolutely. 100% agree. And, you know, it's a trite thing to say, but I do believe everything happens for a reason. Yeah. You know, I truly do. I think there's a reason that you and I and others are experiencing these things. Just like you said, there's a reason we're all on the path, and to just trust in that.
Wow. You know? This has been a fascinating interview. I really appreciate it. And I hope we can do it again. I hope we can do maybe one on out of body experiences. Because I've got some people that do this, not like you, not as, you know, sort of methodical as you, but maybe do a panel on out of body experiences, because it is a key part that people don't really realize. This is much more than just aliens flying around in tin cans. When you start to get to the consciousness aspect, you start to realize this world is, who said it? Maybe Einstein, or said, not only is it more magnificent than you think, it's more magnificent than you could ever imagine, the universe. It's that amazing. And you and I have got a glimpse of this, and hopefully we can do it again, and we can do this aspect. And I definitely would like to, in any updates of the contact modalities, is have your little chapter and talk about it, because I think you're on the leading edge of this that I've heard of in terms of doing this and using it to access this very great mystery that we're facing, and that we probably agreed to come in here and work on. So thank you for your time, and let me know when you're going back into your sessions, and if anything comes up, or if there's anything that you want to make public, we'll do it again, because I think people are going to be fascinated with this interview.
I definitely will, Grant. And I look forward to us perhaps doing a panel with, you know, out-of-body experiencers as well. Like you said, I think there's a lot we can all learn from this. Thank you so much for your time. And I just appreciate having people out there like yourself and your listeners and your viewers that have open minds to this thing. You know, that's how we're going to change the world.
Yeah. And you never know. It may just be one person, but it may be the person that we needed to actually help us, you know, break it. You never know who we're gonna come in contact with. And so thank you, Peter, for your time, and let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Grant, as well. Thank you very Namaste. Much. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.